Halloween tomorrow, or Thursday here in the building. It's tomorrow.
Should I dress up?
I don't know. Why are we?
I have no costume currently.
We're doing it tomorrow. I think it's because there's people maybe are already getting out of work early with their kids or something.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that's why we're doing it tomorrow. I did look last night to see what options were, if there's anything on Amazon I could get quick enough. Cannot. So I'm not going to go to Spirit Halloween.
Beanie Baby costume from last year, but you can wear it this time instead?
No, I don't.
It's just a giant Snuggie, essentially. It's been cleaned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it has.
It's just been hanging up in the closet since then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to go to Spirit Halloween and spend $70 just for a half work day.
It is that much.
It's less now.
Is it?
What?
Two days before they get discounted. Oh, yeah.
Really?
People usually have their costumes by now.
See, to me, is when a lot of people are running out last minute to get the little accessories and things like that. For Halloween.
This is where like November 2nd, you go to Spirit Halloween and you pack up for next year. Like, hey, what do you want to be next year? And you get.
Were you thinking sexy convict or sexy cop? Is that what you were going for, Alex?
You think I'm going with the sexy theme? I mean, interesting.
Crop top? That would be so good.
Crop top? Oh,
that'd
heck
be so funny, dude. Come on.
Crop top? Nah.
You in a crop top tomorrow on the video stream for 4 hours?
Yeah. If you are willing to, not the crop top, but within, if you gave me three, like if you guys were willing to pay for it and you gave me three to choose from, I would probably wear one of them. But
one
I'm
of the
not
ones
paying.
That has sexy in front of it?
Or well, why are you stuck on this sexy theme costume?
Because you being in it's funny.
Remember, we're on video, which is even better on Wednesday and Thursday. So as of now, I do not have a plan to wear anything for the company. It's not a Halloween party per se. It's in the middle of the day. We can run downstairs for like 5 minutes during our show. It's not like there's like a full party.
Well, other people can be a part of it. But
yeah, but we're talking about us. We're talking about us. All right, Drew, are you wearing something tomorrow? Are you going as the bad football team's quarterback? Are you wearing Joe Burrow jersey or what?
The best I can do is wear my Joe Burrow jersey because I don't have anything, and I don't also feel like, nor do I have the capability of dropping $70 to $100 on a costume.
Can you wrap all your limbs in, like, ace bandage? He's constantly hurt. Cover all the injuries right now, on your body.
Just to wear a wrist brace.
Wear a wrist brace and
just the Burrow jersey.
I need to tape my wrist.
Cover. Put a knee sleeve on.
Someone says I should go as a sexy tour guide with a pamphlet about the Grand Canyon. Oh, boy. Good text. That's a good text.
Literally nobody else in the building would understand what we're talking about.
Have like a canteen of water or whatever. Oh, yeah.
That's a good text. Someone says, go as Bink, get a pair of shorts, a can of chew, and a six-pack of beer, and just carry it around.
You have bought chew.
I have what?
You bought dip.
For Bink, yeah.
Yeah,
he did. Bink's filling in later on this week.
It could
maybe
just be a prop, and then you could, like, give him the can
of dip. I'll text Bink and see if he's good to go. He's filling in for you Thursday and Friday with me. I got to find out if I need to buy him some winter gear. I can't remember what it was. Copenhagen Winter Fresh Shortcut? Long cut. I don't remember. I'm not sure.
Somebody said GoldenEye should be Mario and Luigi.
Mario!
Okay, you got the voice ready to go, I see. So we'll figure it out. We'll continue to take your suggestions. Also, I'm just curious, what are adults wearing this Halloween on Thursday?
My wife and I did go to Spirit Halloween a couple weeks ago, and they did have Scooby-Doo costumes.
That's honestly, you and your wife should totally last weekend was the Halloween party weekend. I guess there could be some this weekend still, but most of them were this past weekend.
Yeah, that would have been.
Saw some on Fremont Street when we were in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Fremont already has people in costumes sometimes because it's Fremont, but there was definitely a few more because it was Halloween weekend.
Someone said Cody can go in the hot dog run uniform. Yeah, the costume.
There you go. Give me the costume. That would be.
Like a depressed hot dog because you keep losing.
A depressed hot dog.
It's a shriveled hot dog, you know?
How the hell am I supposed to get that done by tomorrow?
No condiments. What's that?
So how am I supposed to get that tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Someone goes to a sexy Bill Snyder.
I should tape a water bottle to my hand.
Joe Burrow callback.
That would be good.
Very good. Lots of choices. I'll consider it tonight.
All right. So we mentioned when we were talking with Vinny afterwards and someone would say, oh, what about the schedule? And I said, well, it's okay because we've got some audio from someone that actually hosts a national, I think it's just online. I don't know if it's on the CBS Sports Network or whatever. He used to work for Pro Football Focus, Mike Renner. And he was talking about the Chiefs, 7-0 start and where they're at. And we found someone that has added new qualifiers to being undefeated. It's not good enough, I guess, to be 7-0 going for a three-peat.
This is one of the fakest undefeated teams right now in the NFL. They're blowing nobody out. 5-1 score wins so far in the season. They ain't going undefeated. They're going to drop one. They could lose to the Broncos this upcoming week. Ooh. They are a good team. They're not a great team. They're not going undefeated.
Really?
Whoa, so you got a hater.
Mike, how many teams are better than the Chiefs right now?
I think... I'm not saying anyone's better than them, but they're not this juggernaut that goes undefeated, right? There's a reason one team did in the past 25 years, and they were blowing teams out left and right. They're doing the Patriots, so it just ain't going to happen.
Look, so that was Mike Renner. If you're going to say they're not going to go undefeated, that's not a hot take. That's not being a hater. That part is fine. It's very hard to go undefeated. Saying they're the fakest undefeated team... No, first of all, we had
what the hell does that mean?
I don't know what it means, but if we're going to stick with his loose definition, whatever it is, of what that looks like, I mean, the Steelers a couple years ago, I guess were that. We all thought they weren't going to be the juggernaut either. They were 12-0 or 11-0,
whatever.
The Eagles
not that long ago. So those are teams, 9-0, but
this is a team that's in the middle of a three-peat campaign, went back-to-back Super Bowls already. They have the best quarterback in football. They have the best head coach in football. They have the best tight end in NFL history. They got the best interior defensive lineman. And they've already beaten the Baltimore Ravens. They already beat the San Francisco 49ers, who were at one point the NFC favorite to win the Super Bowl. The Ravens still have the second-best odds to come out of the AFC to go to the Super Bowl. So what fake? What? Now we're adding new qualifiers, Cody. They're not winning by 12 points or 14 points every game, so they're just not good enough.
It's a lazy narrative. He's not wrong. The Patriots did ruin some teams in their way to 16-0. Now, I wouldn't say every game was a blowout, but like the first half of the season was a blowout where they were beating every team 35-10 or whatever across the board. The NFL's changed a lot since 2007. Do you know, this is the stat where I know what they're doing is not fake, and this is a stupid comment from Mike Renner. The NFL, every week, because like you and I are credentialed members of the Chiefs media, we are given a little stat pack from the NFL about things you should know about what's happening in the NFL today. And I'm going to give you a stat from that supports all of this being complete BS. This is the most one score game settled by 6 points or less in NFL history this year. The league has never historically been closer than it is now. One team is better than the rest of the league at winning those close games, and the other teams just don't know how to do it. I don't think they need to apologize for knowing how to win. That's a skill,
right?
Not a luck.
Yeah, you win close games. There's something to be said of like learning how to win, knowing how to win, and the Chiefs have mastered that over the last couple of years. I think heck, Vinny brought that up when we were discussing him, these teams, right? Like when you win in the playoffs, when you go to the playoffs, you know how they're winning now in a way can also help them in the postseason because they're used to these tightly contested contests.
Well, I think whether you want to call it fake or not, fake undefeated or not, they're still undefeated. So it does like I don't think there's any, to me, it's more of a hating take because you're calling, if he almost backtracked his statement essentially by saying, I'm not saying they're the worst team and I'm not saying there's anybody better than them, but they're not a dominant juggernaut. Like I think there's no wiggle room there in what he said.
This is one of the fakest undefeated teams right now in the NFL. They're blowing nobody out.
It doesn't matter. If you go undefeated, you go undefeated. To your point, Cody, it's more, there's more close games.
I mean, shoot, they go 15-2, Drew. You know what I mean? Like, they go 15-2. Who can't? Like,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Because, by the way, if they beat the Bills, we may think undefeated still isn't happening. 15-2, 16-1 is absolutely a real, real thing.
And if they go undefeated and they win the Super Bowl, it doesn't matter how good that Patriots team was or how much better they looked, they are not as good as the Kansas City Chiefs undefeated team is because they finished undefeated. So whether a team, because there are plenty of teams who look great, but they don't get the job done across all of sports. It's not just football itself. There's teams that are way better, that look great, but then when it comes down to it, they don't get it done. People forget about them. We know how good the Patriots team was, but nobody remembers them as much as they would this Chiefs team, even if they don't blow everybody out by 20 points.
It's just ignoring the way the league is playing. The Chiefs, as it sits right now, have the sixth best per game point differential in the sport. What do you mean they're not blowing people out? Who is? They have the sixth best point differential per game in the entire NFL. The only teams better, Detroit, Buffalo, Washington, Pittsburgh, and Minnesota. Over their last three, they are 10 points better than their opponents on average per game. If that continued, that would be good for third in the NFL. It's a joke. It's a joke to suggest that being close in these games doesn't matter. And he was, you know what? If you're going to have the hot take of it, then just lean in and say that they aren't the best team. Yeah, and admit all the teams you think are better than Kansas City.
Yeah, he was attempting to audition, I think, for what, Greeny's show or whatever, since Greeny had the worst take last week, and he's trying to one-up him.
What was Greeny's take last week?
Remember that the Ravens cannot be beat with Henry and Lamar playing at a healthy spot, you know, healthy level.
Unfortunately,
or like
he
that.
Also called this Jets season one of the worst failures.
They lost the Browns 4 days later, whatever.
That was pretty rough. They're,
not to like be rude, but I honestly don't know if we put up a survey right now or even just pulled the text line. How many people have ever heard of the name Mike Ritter?
Honestly. I have, but not us.
Not us. We work
have.
In the media,
yeah, we
Cody.
Obviously have.
That's not what
Show
I'm saying.
Hands.
That's not what I'm saying. Obviously, we have because we've talked about his crap over at PFF before when he used to work there. I'm saying just a typical Chiefs fan. I bet you 10% have heard the name Mike Ritter before. So congratulations. You did what you wanted, I guess, and here we are talking about you.
Yeah.
I just think there's no way, like he tried to make it seem like it wasn't a hating comment because he was caught off for being a hating comment, but he was also hating at the exact same time. While saying
first two responses
it was
on Twitch were no and agreed, never heard of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just to me, like, I'm pretty confident in saying that, like, you know, there's some names that everybody just kind of know, or there's no way most people have heard that name before. Now, let's talk about something that I think is concerning if you were to nitpick about this football team right now. It flared back up, didn't result in a loss or anything. Again, they find ways to win, but Andy Reid was asked about the left tackles yesterday. Wanya Morris, Kingsley hasn't played since week one of the season or week two of the season. But he said they're very young. We're really young at that spot. And we saw it become an issue at times in game. Wanya Morris had, what, three holding calls? Felt like two or three were within five or six plays of each other.
They were legitimately inside of like 5 minutes of actual game time. Two backed up against the end zone. Then he had another one called essentially on the subsequent drive. So the first 2 weeks, it was Kingsley Suamataia. Then all the Juwan Taylor penalties creeped up for the following weeks after that. And now Wanye is a problem because Wanye had three holding penalties in that game. Just as a reminder, Juwan Taylor has seven penalties on the year. That ranks him in the bottom 10 of 140 qualified tackles. And Wanye just got three in a game. So he's probably creeping up the list a little bit. It is the only actual concern I have about their offense, because the thing about their offense that maybe has not been pointed out enough is that they are ninth in points per game, and they have managed to do that gold without their number one, number two wide receiver and their number one running back. And they are still the ninth best offense. If that doesn't speak to Patrick Mahomes' winning ability or his ability to get offense out of nowhere, I don't know what does. Ninth. The tackles are the one weak link. Somehow they're the weaker link than the wide receivers because, this is probably less for Juwan now, who I actually think is playing better this year than he was last year. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think he's actually having a better year this year than last, but the penalties have got to get reduced down. And I'm going to be scared about Kingsley or Wanye. Right now it's Wanye all season, if you want me to be honest, because when they face elite level pass rushers, those guys are beating them up on those spots. Max Crosby just made him look bad. He's a great pass rusher. But, I mean, it wasn't a competition.
The one adjustment we've seen the last couple weeks, though, and it is from Mahomes and his willingness to take off and run, and that has allowed them to convert some key third downs. As long as that ankle is healthy and there's no reason to believe it wasn't more than just getting rolled up on and he'll get treatment during the week and nobody's expecting anything to be concerned about. We'll talk to Nate Taylor in the 1 o'clock hour today about that as well. That's the adjustment I think we've seen from Mahomes, is he's decided, all right, I can also utilize my legs a little bit more. You know, in the postseason, that's typically something he's doing. I think Wanye, the holding calls were in large part because he was going up against Max Crosby. And so it really, really stood out. You know, they're going to go up against the Bucs this week. This defense, the Bucs, is not nearly the same Bucs defense that we saw the Chiefs face a couple times over the last few years. It's just not the same defensive unit. They have some pieces. Vita Vea is still in the middle, but
yeah.
A couple years ago when they played the Bucs, and obviously in the Super Bowl as well, completely different Bucs defense.
Well, Levante did. That was really, really
very good.
Good defense.
So this is not the same daunting task. And then in a few weeks after that, they'll take on the Bills. You know, there's not many guys like Max Crosby in the league. I'm actually fine with I thought Juwan Taylor was pretty damn good the other day. But Wanya Morris and the left tackles, it's going to be an inconsistent frustration at times. I think throughout the year, there'll be a strong couple of drives, and then we'll say, all right, here we go again. It's another holding call or whatever. That's going to be the reality of having average left tackle play at times and also just so young at that position. And now we've just accepted it, but it is still amazing to think back that all training camp, it was Kingsley was running with the ones, and he played a game or so, or a game and a half, or whatever it was.
And now it's just been one year.
It's just his job. And that's a whole offseason conversation, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, because Kingsley obviously was the better player for the entire training camp, but there must be just enough rookie stuff he messes up that don't trust him. Here's where the next three teams match up, if we're curious how we're going to be following this. Tampa Bay is currently 10th in the NFL in sacks per game. Right now, the Denver Broncos are second in the NFL. They have one of the three best defenses in the league, so they are a problem in that area in sacks per game in the NFL, and Buffalo is 16th, right around where Kansas City is.
Now, are the sacks, I'm curious, like on Denver, is that like what Spags does? They get those blitzes from, or they get that from the secondary, or who on the defensive line is actually stacking up sacks for them? I'm just trying to think of the household names. We know about the secondary, but
well, some of those are probably what you're describing as coverage sacks, which I think is probably a more than fair way to put it. I didn't have their exact.
No, you're good. We'll worry about that when they play in a couple weeks. But I was just curious.
Well, I mean, it's more than fair because I'm just telling you how many sacks they get per game, not necessarily who is getting those sacks and if they have to fear a guy like Max Crosby. Nick Bonita is the guy who's getting the most. He's got the outside linebacker. He's got six of them.
Okay.
5.5 out of Jonathan Cooper, the outside linebacker. 4 from Zach Allen, the defensive end. They get him from everywhere is the short answer. They have got 7 guys with multiple sacks.
Used to Tampa's 10th?
10th.
Because Tampa gets them from a variety of different ways. Like Vita Vea has 3. Levante David has 3. CJ Brewer has 2. Nelson, the linebacker, is 2. It sounds like they blitz. They blitz a lot. I mean, they got 3 linebackers of 2+ sacks on the season.
Yeah, they get them from a little of everywhere.
Trash of the day.
We got an update, guys. You might have remembered a month or so ago, we brought up the bank hack that wasn't really a hack. It was fraud. Let it recall. People were going to ATMs, taking out money they didn't actually have, and then they were stunned to hear that they might get in trouble. Well, now it's time to pay up. That's because the latest update, customers who allegedly withdrew money from Chase Bank ATMs using an illegal scheme that blew up on TikTok over the summer, now they're going to have to cut their own hefty checks back to the bank. The bank is, of course, suing.
Oh, they'd like that money back?
The 4 customers who allegedly owe the bank nearly $662,000 in 4 separate lawsuits. One case involves a masked man who allegedly deposited a $335,000 check to a defendant's account. The defendant owes it $291,000, the most across all 4 cases. In all 4 cases, they said the bank reached out to the defendants demanding they pay the amount of any overdraft along with any fees. However, the defendants have so far, of course, failed to do so. Well, yeah, they illegally pulled out $291,000. Yeah. I'm sure that money is long gone. Let's be real. You think that they pulled out in this bank hack, which is just fraud, $291,000 and they only spent 10 grand of it or 5 grand? No, I bet
they just
you that,
saved
I bet
it
you
all.
That
they
money,
put it in a low interest bearing savings account.
I bet you they went and just seized the property. My guess is they went and bought cars or did other things.
Have to take their Bugattis to the bank
mm-hmm.
and just drop
probably,
them off.
Probably need to seize that. That's why when they're suing them, that'll involve them being able to probably seize their assets if they bought a house, if they bought cars or whatever it may be.
Yeah, whatever they might have purchased. I still can't get over the fact that anyone thought it was a good idea to. Like, they thought it was a good idea to be like, it was a hack. You could just deposit any amount of money and then just take it out. You're like, that's not how hacks work. And also, you knew they'd want the money eventually, right? If you're going to steal that amount of money, it needs to be in the millions, and you got to be planning on leaving the United States.
You already have to have a plan in place.
You need to be heading to Belize with that $1 million tomorrow. with an attempt to just stay there with your cash in a country where your dollar maybe goes a little further.
And there's no extradition. Is that the advice you're giving out there?
I'm just saying, if you're going to steal, don't steal $100,000. That's not enough
line
to
says,
get away with it.
Cody you know? Saying he works at a bank in 3, 2, 1.
I didn't say that. I mean, I'm telling you right now, when this was going through social media, they're just like, look at this bank hack. You're like, again, not a hack. That's not how this works. You're just like, I'll be honest, we didn't grow up with like a ton of money. My parents used to write a check on a Friday because they knew they'd be paid on Monday before that check cashed when we were kids sometimes, right? The float one.
Yeah.
Float a check and just try to get till Monday. If you were doing it for that, but you were planning on putting the money back, Chase probably not coming after your ass. But if you were planning on just writing a check for $200,000, pulling all of that cash out somehow before the bank caught it.
That's what I still don't understand.
How is the bank just giving away these 200 grand?
That's what I don't get is they wrote a check. They knew they didn't have the money in their account, and the bank still let them withdraw that. You can't take $290,000 out of an ATM. So I'm very confused how they actually got that kind of money.
Aren't there like limits as to what, like even like if somebody came up to you, Cody, and was like, hey, I want $200,000. Are you even able to give them all of that?
Yeah, technically. I mean, if you have it on hand. You might have to do an order for that amount of money, right? But you are. I mean, it's their money. I mean, you're supposed to give it to them. I don't think you have to have it on hand. By the way, not Belize. They have an extradition treaty.
All right.
They want to choose a different country. They speak a lot of English.
Still reminds me of the story from Easter Sunday. We don't have those people are long gone. They robbed basically one of the Garda or Brinks facilities and got away with tens of millions. Clearly a professional job, if you will. And those, they've never recovered the money or anything. They have, like, as far as we know, no leads or anything. They are long gone, right?
You'd be in a foreign country? You'd be somewhere else?
If you somehow had the master plan.
If you got away with $100 million, here's the problem.
It's heavy. It's very heavy.
Yeah, you have to claim anything over $10,000 to travel.
Well, I think that's what I'm saying. I think it was a pro job that the people that got away with, I think was it $20 million? Mm-hmm. They probably already had somebody set up with a plane ready to roll and professionals. I doubt they just dug a bunch of money in a hole and are waiting 10 years to access it. Like, they're probably out of the country.
Yeah. It's like Walter White's desert barrels.
I doubt they buried it in the desert. I'm saying, like, I bet you a good chunk of that money is overseas and they're out of the country.
Saying if they knew what they were doing, then that's the route.
But do you think they're ever going to catch those people that stole $30 million or whatever it was from the Garda facility? No.
Do you think they bought anything before they left? Or do you think that
I think that was a completely professional job. Inside job. There's no way you're stealing from one of those facilities without knowing what you're doing.
Yeah. You don't just like...
This wasn't Chief Sahalik just deciding to pay off the gambling debt.
You and I don't have a couple of beers on the patty and try to hatch a plan to rob a armored bank facility. I think you're probably a professional.
Crazy. That is the trash of the day. Up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Let's talk more about the cornerbacks now with the latest injury in the secondary. That's next here on Cody and Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour, and a reminder... At 1 o'clock today, Nate Taylor going to talk some Chiefs football with us, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic. It'll be good to check in with him again. We'll ask him about something I want to address right here, and that is the cornerback room, and see if he's hearing how they're feeling internally and his connections and sources with the organization. Do they feel like that's an area that they need an upgrade, more depth? Because we know Nazi Johnson's in concussion protocol. We'll hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes a little bit later on in the week. Remember, they play on Monday, so there's some extra time, I guess, potentially for Nazi Johnson. Yeah, to be back. And Andy Reid yesterday acknowledged that, look, they're also, just like the left tackle, they're also very young and guys need reps in that cornerback room opposite McDuffie. And so maybe that will help Joshua Williams. Well, I just thought at times it didn't have a great game on Sunday. He made some mistakes, had the mistake on the one play, the personal foul, unnecessary roughness or whatever it was on top of it. And then you have guys like Roland Wallace, who most people didn't know who that was. We joked about that a week or so ago when he had the interception.
I know, like, he is honestly, now, I guess.
To his credit, we do. We absolutely do. One, he had the interception. He's also playing a lot more. I've told you, I feel like I've been consistent on this the last week of this conversation, which is just that it's not that I believe they need to go trade for a guy to start opposite Trent McDuffie. I just think they need some more depth at that position because we already just saw it. Now you're with Nazi Johnson on concussion protocol. Now you're even thinner.
Yeah, it's not You knew my stance when Najee was healthy is that they'll be fine. You, not that I didn't think Jalen Watson wasn't the best corner available to them, but that you would not notice the difference. Add in one more player and the answer is you will. Okay, I just, like, we had talked about this. There's only so much water a boat can take on, and apparently it was only one more corner. I still think if Jalen Watson was healthy, or sorry, not if Jalen Watson, if Najee Johnson was healthy and playing, you wouldn't really fundamentally notice the difference. But Gardner Minshew got him on a couple. The blitzes didn't quite get to Gardner Minshew in time. He did a really, really, really good job in that game combating the blitz and getting the ball out on some of those passes. And yeah, as a result of that, Joshua Williams got picked on. But we've also decided that Joshua Williams has moved down the depth chart. Joshua Williams, when Najee Johnson comes back, is what, fourth on the depth chart now? Seems to come behind Roland Wallace, doesn't it?
Sure. I don't think Josh Williams is behind Roland Wallace.
He's definitely behind Najee Johnson.
Well, sure.
And I think that Roland Wallace has a chance. Let's just say he's going to get more playing time this week, and let's assume that Najee Johnson can't get through concussion protocol in a single week. You can, but it's a tight timeline. Typically, it's 2 or 3 weeks before you come back from that. And Roland Wallace, he can usurp him just the same. And so if that's going to be the case, I still feel okay about their depth. I wouldn't be any more panicked over a concussion. If he had a soft tissue injury, a broken arm, something like Jalen Watson, we're probably having a different conversation. But concussions, for the most part, for players who are just getting their first one, not a Tua situation, they have a definitive timeline. We'll see him next week or the week after. And by that metric, I'm still fine with where they are at corner. If they wanted to spend another, I don't know, I guess seventh round pick, that would be fine. Because I think the way we played this clip a little bit yesterday, this is the way they should view the trade deadline on corner. It's the same way Bill Belichick in talking about the Joshua Uche trade yesterday, which is essentially they've been giving up nothing.
Well, I assume it was a 25-6th. It was a 26-6th, then honestly, then they didn't give up anything in my mind. And then if you like the player and re-sign him, then you re-sign him. Look, Josh Uche is a really good rusher. He hasn't had a chance to rush much this year for the Patriots because they've been behind a lot. And, you know, it's the situation hasn't been good. But he had a big year 2 years ago. Now, you know, he had Judon on the other side of him. So it was two good pass rushers.
And he's just like, it was a 26. 26 doesn't mean anything. There's a clip later in that, too, where he's just like, so they gave up a 26-6th. And a 2025 fifth for two players who help them immediately. And he's like, dude, you don't even know if the fifth round guy a year from now or the sixth round guy 2 years from now will have anything to do with this team, will have any impact on this team, would even make a roster on this team. And if that's the case, they want to treat corner like that, cool. Outside of that, I'd probably just stick with the guys you got.
I just think the depth and the drop off that we already are seeing, like at some point there's still limitation. It's not as obvious because it's not wide receiver position, and so we don't focus in on it. And yeah, there's a track record. I think you brought it up yesterday. Yes, there's a track record of Dave Merritt and Spags, of course, developing. And I do actually, on that position, I do believe it when Andy says, hey, we just got to get them more reps. Like as Josh Williams starts playing even more, as Roland Wallace starts playing even more, that they will get better. I truly believe that at that position with that coaching staff on that side of the ball, I actually buy into that. So that'll be something to watch Monday night. Now, they're not going to get the big test. It's good for Kansas City. There's no Chris Godwin. There's no Mike Evans. So it helps when you're going up against
Come to Buffalo. Cooper, yeah. Khalil Shakir, yeah, some guys who can,
yeah.
I mean, like
Keon Coleman, yeah.
I'm not saying that those are like superstars, but that's a good group of wide receivers.
This Monday night, I mean, it's like McMillan and Sterling Shepard and Trey Palmer or something. Like that's the kind of, that's basically what they're going up against.
In fairness,
once again, it'll be their tight end, Cade Otton, that people will talk about because he's been better. So yes, big deal. Yeah. Cade Otton on Monday night can go get 78 yards. Okay, that's fine. That's not going to beat you. It's more about Bucky Irving, the running back, and honestly, just Baker doing Baker things at times.
Again, if you've got a good tight end, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Start him in fantasy against the Chiefs and move on with your life. But the leading wide receiver for them was Jacoby Meyer. He needed 6 catches just to get 52 yards. Good touchdown. Good blitz. Mm-hmm. That wasn't bad corner play. That was just the blitz didn't get home, so they didn't disrupt the pass. 4 for 28 for DJ Turner. 2 for 26 for Trey Tucker. Like, you're right. It's like no wide receiver all season has truly fried them. And I know for part of that, they had Jalen Watson. So, like, now we'll see. You're right. I probably can't give you the definitive answer until they're given a real test. They're probably not going to be given a real test at wide receiver until Buffalo. So we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks because the Broncos wide receivers are eh, and the Bucs wide receivers are even worse because of how hurt they are at the position. The other part about it, though, is the only team that I think has, I would say, top five wide receiver weapons possibly in the NFL that they would face in the postseason. And that's down the postseason. When Ozzie would be healthy, and I don't think Jalen Watson would be, but they said there's a chance he could play in the postseason, so we'll just leave it up maybe as to a slight possibility, is the Texans. And that's only when healthy. That's with Nico Collins healthy, with Stephon Diggs healthy, with Tank Dell healthy. So they got to get through the rest of the season, which they haven't been able to do so far. If they got all their weapons together, that's a unit that I'm like, can you cover with the corners you got? Like, could you cover that team with the corners you got? That one's the only one I'm not sure about out of the rest of the competition. The Bills wide receivers are good. They're not as good as the Texans when healthy. Because Nico was a top, I mean, he was like a top five wide receiver before he got hurt, wasn't he? Top 10?
I don't know about this year, but he was trending in the top 10 direction.
He was like Rashee Rice, where it's like, these guys might both very well by the end of the season be top 15 wide receivers. They both got hurt, unfortunately, so people won't discuss them that way. But Nico Collins with the NFL's leading wide receiver before he went
down. Just that receiver group, that's true. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk as the season goes on. Heck, even on Thursday with Thursday Night Football. The Texans have other problems right now to where, you know, it's hard to view that wide receiver room, not only because of injury, but their offensive line is problematic. Their defense is banged up right now, and they're very, very fortunate they won this past weekend against the Colts. You know, C.J. Stroud hasn't been playing at as high of a level, and that is
same
why
problem. He's missing all of his weapons.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why still, despite the stat line from Mahomes and stuff, why it's impressive. Like, they have injuries and all that, and they're finding ways to still win. The Texans did find a way to still win against the Colts, but in general, like, C.J. Stroud's play has been severely impacted as well because of the injuries. So this is not just happening to Mahomes or anything else. Like, you start losing weapons, at some point you reach a point. C.J. Stroud put together the best rookie season we've seen from a quarterback in NFL history. And this year, he's come back down to earth quite a bit.
This also probably speaks to why Kansas City has been so impressive this year. Not just the record, which is obviously super impressive. The Texans, right? They didn't even lose. They lost Nico Collins after the Chiefs lost Rashee Rice. This would be the first week Stephon Diggs missed. So it's like some of the weapons we're talking about that have been missing for this team have not been missing all year. Kansas City is currently a better points per game offense than Houston. So they're going through the same problems, right? They're all losing people. One of these teams have been able to overcome it. What's most impressive is the only teams really above Kansas City who has had issues keeping their offensive weapons healthy are from a points per game perspective, are San Francisco and Tampa Bay. Well, San Francisco, kudos. That is just a well-designed offense, and Brock Purdy's done a nice job. Because they have been like Kansas City. They've been at a lot of their weapons like at all different times of year, kind of constantly, including their star running back from the beginning of the season. Tampa Bay only lost their weapons last week. They actually haven't been tested in that regard. They just lost them all. Up to that point, they still had their full complement. Everyone else who scores more points per game than them has had a healthy group. Minnesota, Green Bay, Buffalo, Washington, Detroit. They've had all of their offensive weapons a huge chunk of the year. So it just doesn't feel me. And plus, you couple that with the fact of what I had said earlier is I still think that this is not just the best defense in the NFL, that the Chiefs are now bordering on historically great defensive things. If they go through, specifically, if they go through the season and they end up capping off at a Super Bowl, I don't care if they go undefeated or not, they cap it off as a Super Bowl. You and I can face the reality right now. If the Chiefs win the Super Bowl this year, we will say, which unit will we say is better? Defense. Right? So for two straight years, they will have won a Super Bowl led primarily, or at least more so, by their defense. I know in the postseason, Patrick Mahomes was great last year. He's a huge reason why they won, but they've been a bit defensive team lately. Yeah. Well, then why wouldn't they deserve the credit to be amongst those great defenses and the ways that we discuss them? The way do we discuss the Bucs or the Ravens or the Legion of Boom or any of the other ones that we talked about earlier in the show? All of those is where Kansas City's defense deserves to be, especially if they win a third title. Although they've won two in a row. I don't know what more you're asking for.
The reason why folks outside of Kansas City will not is the same reason why we played you a piece of audio to start this hour. That we've unfortunately reached a point where now...
Saturation?
Saturation, but also any whether it's Mike Renner, who nobody knew who the hell he was until today, or it's Stephen A. Smith, or it's Mad Dog, or whoever, or Greeny the other last week saying that the Ravens are unbeatable and things like that, because acknowledging that the current team that is great, and even after they three-peat this season, is great, and just going with that is not going to get them the attention that they want. And so they will come up with some other way to discount how what the Chiefs did, as dumb as that may be, and it is dumb. If this team,
so it's a great defense on the wrong team.
If it's a three-peat, well, they won't use it in a positive way. It'll the narrative then will be Mahomes. It'll be the reason why the defense won't get the credit is because it'll be used to downplay Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. I already I don't want to do that.
I'm saying what is very predictable that's going. You're asking me, will they? Why would they not be considered an all-time great defense? I'm telling you the reason why some outside of Kansas City would say that. If they three-peat, the narrative won't be, oh my gosh, the defense took Mahomes and this team to the Super Bowl again, and they three-peated for the first time in NFL history. That's what it should be. But there will be people out there that will use how great the defense is to talk about how Mahomes hasn't played well enough the last 2 years, which is complete BS, because in the playoffs last year, he was actually really, really good. That'll be the narrative outside of Kansas City, I think, more than giving them their flowers for being a great defense.
You know, this is actually where Mahomes probably hurts him, is because Patrick Mahomes is one of the single greatest quarterbacks to ever play the sport. Could go down as the single greatest when the thing's done. All those defense I previously mentioned either had a rookie quarterback in Russell Wilson, right, or a bad quarterback. It was, look at what they did. Now, Peyton Manning was on one of those all-time defenses, but he stunk in that year, so that's part of it. Trent Dilfer, Jim McMahon.
Yeah, these Trent are Dilfer not, doing a great job down at UAB these days.
These are not statistically good quarterbacks at the times that those defenses were great. I think part of the reason that those guys, who was the Bucs quarterback in the early 2000s?
Brad Johnson.
I think that that's why they actually get more clout. I think they get more clout because they drug a corpse of a quarterback across the finish line most of the time. The all-time great defenses, unless we're going back to like the Steel Curtain in the 70s, you know, like whatever, they were dragging not a top 10 quarterback across the finish line. And so Mahomes takes all the heat away from him in the postseason. People are like, well, that was a really good defense. Not all-time great, because look how good Mahomes is. Yep. You're like, no. Come on, man. It's both. That's why they've won 3 Super Bowls in 5 years. It's been both. They were also the 18th ranked points per game defense 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl. The second ranked points per game defense last year when they won the Super Bowl. They are currently top 5 again. This is where I'm saying, and like it was the second half 2 years ago. Mahomes hurts them. You're right. Mahomes hurts their odds.
I also think, though, why they should be considered that already. This era of the NFL is just so pass happy, and the league has bended rules to make it tougher to play defense. And so, yeah, when people bring up, of course, the 85 Bears and the Steel Curtain, and heck, even the Chiefs, the 1969 and 1970 season, and what they were able to do, multiple Hall of Famers is part of it. But also, I think when you watch the league today, anytime we see a guy go across the middle and all of a sudden there's a penalty for whether it's targeting or whatever, I'm not saying that some of those rule changes aren't great for safety. There's a difference. I'm sure Dana Hughes would discuss this well, even in the 90s. Like, difference going across the middle in 1995 than it is in 2024. You're protected now. Makes it tougher for defenses. I think that's what makes what they're doing that much more impressive.
You can't even hit a quarterback in the knees anymore. Like, you can't even go low. Like, can't go low. Can't hit him over the middle.
You can't land on top of him.
Can't hit him with your helmet. Can't land on top of them too hard.
Hip drop tackle, you'll get fined. That's why what they're doing is that much more impressive.
Yes. Then some of those other teams would be like, well, the Chicago Bears defense in 1985 only allowed 9 points per game. Like, yeah, I'm sure they did. Well, they physically ran someone over there with Buick Regal on the field. Like, you do whatever the hell you wanted in those days. It didn't matter. Like, I'm sure it was easy to play defense when you could commit attempted murder from a, you know, like from a defensive standpoint. It's nuts. I just think they deserve more credit. Always deserve more credit. I never feel like they're getting enough.
I think it's hard. I guess sometimes it's hard to compare, because Mac and I were talking about the basketball comparison as well in here just a moment ago. People who say, who like pull a Mad Dog and say, well, George Mikan, you know, is one of the best basketball players of all time. It's like, dude, he's not even as good as
Mikan drill.
George Mikan might be able to start on an NBA team currently, the way that things sit. Like, I know that, and there's no disrespect to the 85 Bears, the Steel Curtain, but I think that we're comparing the players now, along with the limitations on defense, it's much harder for you to cover players who are faster, who are more athletic, who are smarter, who are better, who are trained in a different sort of way than what they used to be. It makes it a lot harder, I think, for what they're doing now compared to what they did in the 70s, 80s, and 60s, and 90s.
I can't even imagine. Like, you were just saying 90s. Imagine the 80s.
Yeah, look, I'm sure there are yeah. some of you listening that remember watching, right, the 85 Bears, and I don't think we should...
That can still be number one. It's fine. I'm just talking against about one them. Of the yeah. top 10. You know?
I just think when you're looking, like if you put Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen in 1985 and what they can sure. do, what the Chiefs are able to do in limiting Lamar Jackson, limiting Josh Allen and Derrick Henry and the offense, I think it's hard to ignore how impressive they've been, where they're not even forcing turnovers. They're just stone cold stopping teams. You can't even cross the 50 against the Chiefs defense for most of the time, especially last year.
I will say, Chiefs fans, one thing I will tell you, when you get in this like bar argument with like some out of town buddy or some lifelong Patriots fan or any of the people nonsense in your life trying to bring negativity to the Chiefs current run, do not let them make you feel bad for the Chiefs being led by a defense. Instead, do yourself a little favor, type an old Pro Football Reference, and look at the rankings of the defense of the Patriots and Tom Brady's Super Bowl wins. If you just want a little ammunition for someone who tries to rain down on your parade, being like, well, Mahomes isn't that good, the defense is having to carry him now. Do yourself a quick little favor and look at the defensive ranks for the teams Tom Brady won the Super Bowl with, because not a single one of them ranked outside the top five in the entire NFL, including the team with the Bucs, and every single one of them in New England. It is fine when you have both an elite quarterback. That's when you're a dynasty. The key difference is if you got no defense, you got Patrick Mahomes, you got a chance. You might run into a ring. If you have Patrick Mahomes and a top five defense, top three defense, you're going to win the Super Bowl almost every damn year. And that's what's happening. That's what happened with Tom Brady's career, and that's what's happening with Patrick Mahomes right now. That's why I would still pick them to win the Super Bowl right now. Before the season, I assume you picked them to three-peat and win the Super Bowl?
I know you and I both did. I don't know if Drew did. He probably
had Cincinnati.
I think
you had
Cincinnati beating them in the AFC title game. I guess you thought it was 2022 still. I'm not sure.
Hey, but yeah. The jury's still out on that.
Technically, it has not been decided. You are correct.
The jury's still out on that.
You are correct. They have to wait until they are officially eliminated from the playoffs for that. For that prediction to be wrong, they have to be eliminated. That is true. They are not eliminated yet.
I guess technically the jury's out, but like they're eating a casual lunch and they're not really sweating the decision. They're happy to just put this one away.
Technically, the Raiders can still win the Super Bowl. So,
In all technicality, sure. You know, why not? Bo Nix could be rookie there. Well, sure.
Could be MVP, technically, Drew. You know,
Only the Panthers are eliminated. And I know not statistically, but they are. Emotionally, it's over for them.
Oh, but they're still alive, actually.
Hold on.
Cincinnati and Carolina both still alive.
You could run 1,000 simulations.
There might be one team that is fully eliminated, and it is the Carolina Panthers. I don't.
That's one of the worst constructed teams I've ever seen. It's embarrassing.
They're back to Bryce Young.
You think Dave Canales, do you think he just like lays in his bed at night and he's just like, the hell did I take this job for? Like, I'd be like, well, there's only 32 of them.
That's exactly right.
That's what he said from the jump.
Because Dave Canales, no disrespect, but he wasn't discussed with any other opening, right? Any other opening.
That was
his one chance. Like, this was his one chance. And we've always said this, you don't ever take a job thinking you're going to fail. You think you're the guy that's going to correct it. So that's why it's like, no, he doesn't regret taking the job. No, because he and anybody, especially in football and coaching, but I would hope in any career choice, I would hope like you take the job. You think you're going to succeed. You think you're going to do well. You don't take the job saying, I don't know, I think I'm going to suck at this.
I tend to be more that range.
Okay. Some of us
have more or less confidence than others, you know? Okay.
Well, you're supposed to have the confidence.
You didn't take the job thinking the show was going to be a failure.
No, but I would say Dave Canales
didn't take the head coaching gig of the Carolina Panthers thinking he was going to be crappy at it and they were going to lose 14 games this year, or whatever it's going to end up being.
After seeing it, though, I think
16.
If you're Canales, I think yes, because he was the higher out of left field almost. But if you're Ben Johnson, let's say the Carolina Panthers fire Canales, and you're Ben Johnson, you're not even entertaining. Like, let's say Carolina.
He also is a much hotter candidate. Dave Canales was not. Mm-hmm.
I know, but after seeing what they've done and how the ownership goes with Tepper and all of that, I don't think you can seriously look at that job and say, this is a good move for me professionally. Like, I get it's a head coaching job, but I don't know if it's a smart one. I think you really have to question, even though it is a head coaching job, whether you actually want that job or not.
I think some smart people are like, there ain't no way to win there. Like, I'm a genius.
I think if you have a brother, that's a different conversation. If I was given multiple opportunities, would I take Carolina over blank city?
God, no.
But if that's your one shot, make a couple million dollars, guaranteed contract, you're still a young coach, you can always go back to being an OC. If it doesn't work out, you take that opportunity. Now, if you're the Ben Johnson, the next up and coming great offense, everybody perceives to be the great offensive coordinator and next great head coach or whatever, you can be pickier because you have more options.
If that is the only job opening and Belichick is insistent on coaching, does he take that job? No. If that's the only opening?
No. Bill Belichick's too smart for that.
Bill Belichick is only going to go to like Dallas, Las Vegas, or the New York Giants, I think, in my opinion, next year, if he coaches. That's it. Dallas is going to open up probably. The Giants, we'll see. They're now talking more and more like it's not going to open up, but we'll see.
Mars
the Raiders,
like
I don't think he would take that, but that one has to be in the running just because Tom Brady now is the part owner and that minority.
And they might have a top pick where they could get a new quarterback and all that stuff too.
All right, up next, let's get to what's trending, and then we'll get right back into a little bit what we were hitting on there, the rest of the AFC in particular, what some of the odds are saying, and if it actually is a three-horse race right now. That's next on 96.5 The Fan.